Hey, listeners, did you know that Yogi Triathlete offers endurance coaching for body and mind? We offer personalized training plans for endurance sports, wellness and mindset, nutrition and recovery guidance, and race preparation and strategy, all within the supportive community of Team Yogi Triathlete. So if you're ready to conquer your fitness goals and push your limits, our endurance coaches are ready to guide you on the journey to peak performance. Go to yogitriathlete.com today to set up your free 30-minute discovery call and embrace a future of strength, stamina, and achievement. Your goals, our experience, the perfect match for unstoppable success.
You can't stop at the first sign that says, this isn't the time. Like, you got to believe. You got to believe. And you got to do the things. It's how committed are you? Like, how committed are you to this belief in yourself that you can achieve these things? Like, constantly keep going and not be satisfied with what you've done in the past.
Well, and if you think you've already done enough, then you're done.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
That's the thing, too. You always have to know that there's more that you can do.
Welcome back to the Yogi Triathlete Podcast. I'm Jess, and I'm here with BJ and Jennifer. Jennifer is the creator of Finding Endurance. She has a new podcast, the Finding Endurance Mindset Podcast. We've got Beej, who's our head coach here at Yogi Triathlete, and these two are fresh off of Ironman 70.3 Oceanside, and we're here to smack it down. Because we know you guys love these smackdowns, and a lot of you have found us because of the smackdown. So they're not going anywhere, and we're here today with a fresh one. And speaking of fresh, we're going to kick this one off with a question over to Jennifer Volman, who's been on the show before. We'll put links to all those episodes in the show notes for this episode. This was her first time racing the Oceanside course, and so I want to get, what are your kind of first thoughts coming off of this race that we've been raving about, and now you've got in yoga, as we would call Vijana. Now you have first-hand experience at this course that we believe is one of the best on the circuit.
No, it is the best on the circuit. This was definitely my favorite 70.3 I've ever done. The bike was really challenging, which I love. And that run course, I don't think you can find a better run course on an Ironman circuit, like hands down. Like every 2 miles, it changed. There was people, there was energy. It was exciting. Like it's my new favorite 70.3 race by far.
Yeah, you've already booked your room at the top of the stairs here for next year.
I did. I claim it. I will be here next year.
So no homestays. We've got our homestay booked for eternity. It was so fun to, you know, obviously we've been raving about it, and then to have you experience it and to love it as much as you did. I mean, I agree. I think that run course, hands down, is one of the most spectacular. It absolutely showcases Southern California in a way that I'm not sure I've ever seen a triathlon showcase it. Even the ones down in Mission Bay, which is the birthplace. It's just so, it's so suiting for an Ironman event because it's challenging. And then it's just brilliant with colors, the strand. It's so alive. So we love that, that you had that experience. And Beej, this is multi-time. You can tell us how many times you've done this. 4 times. How does it feel for you being a 4-time now finisher of this? Like, is it just as amazing, or do you fall more in love with it every year?
I certainly love the course more and more as I race it. I think I've shared, living on the East Coast, looking at this race, we used to watch it online, and it would be like rainy and cold early on. And I'm like, I'm never doing that race. And here we are 3-4 miles down from the race venue, and It is the best 70.3 in my opinion. When they have the ocean swim, which is something I wasn't always a fan of, but I actually love that better than the harbor. But yeah, I love this course 4 times around. I'm gonna make it a 5th next year for sure. It's hard not to race this, but it all comes down to that run course, which, selfishly, I get to train on as much as I want to. So I really know the hills and the ups and the downs. And it just doesn't get better than being on the strand, right? Like literally 10 feet from the water, splashing up. And the people on that looped run, that's the jam. The spectators, the crowds, the sun came out to play yesterday, the warmth. It was the typical SoCal spring day.
All right, well, let's get into the nitty gritties. Let's start smacking this down. Let's talk about the morning. It was chilly. It was in the 40s. And then, of course, always the chatter about the water temps and all of that. But Jennifer, let's start with you. Like, let's talk about how did you prepare just things that you did in the morning to really acclimate to the temperature and also get your mind in a good place to race. Cause both of you, by the way, totally crushed it. And we will reveal those times and those places at some point during this podcast, but let's talk about, yeah. How did you prep in the morning to get yourself ready for that?
Yeah. I always warm up, and I have my athletes always warm up a lot, especially before a cold race, because the last thing you want is to not have your body have warmed up and your heart rate up, and then you hit the cold water and then it jacks your heart rate up. And that causes that panic too. So I went out to the beach. There's nobody on the beach, and I just ran. I did some like strides. I did some easy running. Actually just me and the pros were out on the beach warming up. It was so beautiful. Like the sun hadn't been up yet. So I took a few minutes. I sat in the sand and I did a quick meditation and just was really grateful to be there. And I always like to ask the place that I'm racing in, like safe passage for the day. So I was able to do that and take some breaths and then get my wetsuit on and then, you know, get ready to go into race. But I think especially for cold water swimming, having your body warmed as much as you can before you get the wetsuit on and before you get into the cold water makes a difference between if you panic or don't panic in the water.
Yeah, 100% agree. You got to get warmed up, whether breath work, running, find a way. I was in my wetsuit for the first time before I dropped off the morning clothes bags, and I had my running shoes on. So I was doing little circles in the transition zone until Yo-Yo was coming in hot around one of the corners. He was certainly on fire, and he's always got AirPods in, so you just you get out of his way for sure. But warming up, and obviously the pros are doing it, as Jennifer mentioned, on the beach. They're doing it in transition, so they know it works. So yeah, getting that breath work in, I think, is super important. Getting the breath of fire, the tense and release, like doing these things to get that heart rate up. But also like really not feeding how cold this water is going to be, like understanding it's cold every year, guys, at Oceanside. It's going to be cold. There's no swing in temperature that's going to bring it up to a non-wetsuit swim. It's going to be cold, so expect it to be cold. So do the things like in the morning, layer up. I had 5 layers on in transition, including the yellow puffy. Yes. And when I had to actually take those off to put on my wetsuit, I wasn't that cold. But one thing I want to ask Jennifer, because she mentioned this in when we were standing around, you put a miler. Did you put that?
Oh, that was
space
Julie.
Blanket. Oh, Julie did. That's
that
right.
Was really smart.
Yeah. So putting like the space blanket you get at the end of the race, like cutting it up and put it right against your chest, right, is what I was understanding. Then your triathlon kit, then the wetsuit on top.
Yeah, that was a good idea.
Yeah.
Because that takes away the need of like a vest, or, and that's not very aero. Like, why would you do that?
Oh, to stay warm. It holds the warmth inside. So you swim with it. And then when you get on the bike, which is probably going to be cold for the first, you know, 15 to 30 minutes, you don't have to put anything extra on. Mm-hmm. So you're still aero. You've got the warmth. And I had a space blanket downstairs and actually thought about it for a second.
No, it's a good idea. And yeah. And we went back and forth, like, what do you wear on the bike and what in there? Well, you yeah. don't.
Even at that point, we were deciding.
It was funny. We were so cold waiting for the swim. And I was like, I'm putting all my clothes on when I get. And then I warmed up in the swim. I was like, never mind. I'll be fine. But I had asked a few, like, my friends who are pros, like, what do you do for this? And, you know, the last thing you want, like, you don't, a vest is less aero. So if you're going for like time, the vest is not your best option. It's better if things underneath your tri kit. And so I talked to one pro that like takes Vaseline and puts it on a base layer. Other people will do like the space blanket's a good idea. Just things like that. If you're really thinking about like, how do you be the fastest on the bike? What you put on matters.
And stay flexible. Like we were just saying, I was going to put on arms, possibly going to put on whatever else I had in my bag. And by 15 minutes into the swim, I was like, there's no way I'm putting anything on because this water isn't cold. I don't feel cold. The sun is already coming up. It's only going to get warmer.
Yeah. And the other thing too, for cold swims, I always take a disposable like bottle of water, and a minute before we got on the swim, I poured it down my wetsuit and toss it. And I do that. I've done that at La Quinta. I've done that for St. George, the cold ones, because it takes that, because it's cold, and then you get that initial shock out of the way, and then you get in the water, you've already had the first shock, and your body's already warmed up the water inside your wetsuit, so you're already warmer by the time you get in, and that helps a lot too.
Mm, yeah, and I also find a little sweet treat is that when the air temperature is as cold as it was yesterday, which was 44 degrees in the morning, and then water temperature was high 50s. I don't know what the final temp was.
I think it was like 60 in the harbor.
Well, it's going to be a couple more degrees warmer in the harbor, which it did get switched from the ocean to the harbor. Is that when the air temperature is much colder, I find that when you jump in the water, you're like, this is totally fine. So if you're avoiding this race, or you're fearful of this race because the water temperature is so cold, if you just take preparation to keep yourself warm, like these, it just takes a little bit of effort to set yourself up for success as opposed to sabotage. You get yourself nice and warm. I love that idea of like throwing water down your wetsuit is great. The space blanket. So whatever the next race is, save that space blanket, put it in there for Oceanside next year. And then know that, you know, if your mind is getting caught up in the water temperature, it's actually not really an issue if you do the right prep. And if you're lucky enough that the air temperature is cooler, it won't feel shocking at all. It actually feels warmer than you think. And you're like, and then you haven't wasted all the energy that you can now have for your race performance because you were worrying about the water temperature, which is actually kind of a non-issue because when the air temperature is colder, it actually feels really nice. So, you know, we jumped in the day before into the ocean. It was mad. It was crazy because we had a storm and the water temperature felt amazing.
Yeah, that's the other thing too, is like if you're going to go to a cold water race, get your wetsuit on, get in the water, even if you don't swim, but just like get your face. The biggest thing is the face. It's like the chest and the face.
I think what we did though too, getting in the water, it was like fun, playful. Like,
oh my gosh, Brandon, it was who came from so much fun.
Rhode Island, hadn't been in the ocean in a year. It was like just have that new relationship with it, like just having fun with it. Just
well, we had Edward, my athlete, had never swam in the ocean before, and so we're walking down, and it's like the ocean's mad. We got our wetsuits on. His mom's like, "Are you guys gonna go in that?" And like, but we had so much fun. We just were like kids, like playing in the ocean, and like yeah, splashing around and getting adjusted to it. It was a great way. That was a perfect like race morning, pre-race morning routine.
I love that idea of really how we approached it. And we approached it that way of like this actually going down and meeting for the swim, even though it was like such a short amount of time, like these guys drove in to meet us to do this, but like the goal wasn't get out there and get a swim in. So, you know, if you live landlocked or you don't live near an ocean, the ocean is very different than swimming in a lake. But if you can get here and get into the ocean with the goal of just getting acclimated to the water, just meet the ocean, just have a meeting with the ocean. And then because the ocean was so crazy and there's so much white water and it was pushing us around, the current was so strong, we just went in like children and had so much fun, and it lightened everything. It just lightened. It was cold out. It was all these things, stormy seas. It was like perfect storm stuff. And we had such a blast. And so it's not about getting in the ocean and having some like really successful swim. It's like go in and get acquainted with her and let her know that you've arrived. And like Jennifer said, always ask for safe passage because she'll win 100% of the time.
Yeah, you don't mess with the ocean.
No, you don't mess with the ocean.
Wait, one more thing on the swim. Just a few tips.
Please.
Socks.
Oh yeah, the socks were good.
You can throw them away just, I don't know, 2 minutes before you have to go.
Yeah.
Water bottle with the gel. Like you have that available. You mm-hmm. have the handheld water bottle, and to do what Jennifer was talking about, throw it down your shirt.
I always use baby shampoo in my goggles, always for anti-fog. Like that's 100%. And use the fresh water to rinse them out. So bring the water. I had two bottles of water, one for the goggles, one to put down my shirt or my wetsuit. Gel. Socks.
Oh, and get in the middle. Get in the middle of the swimmers. So if you're standing in a corral, get into the middle of them. When you go to get to the start gate where they're letting five people go every 5 seconds, there's plenty of time in there before you get there to get into the middle of the group of people that you're standing with. And then when you get into the line, you can get to the far right or far left, whatever you want to do, and get in that that line, because I lost you sort of there. I was in the far right one, but I didn't see you.
Some guy went in between us.
Oh, okay.
But I was right behind you. But yeah, I was standing on the outside, and BJ's like, come in the middle. And it was a good, it was like a couple degrees warmer in the middle of people than where I was. And I had it, like, I've never done that before.
That's what I was going to say. Explain why I go in the middle. It's because of the body heat. And then also explain what you did with the socks.
Yeah, so I wore Jess's pair of socks, I forgot. But just because the ground is so cold and we were on concrete waiting around, the sand was cold, so I just, like, I threw a morning clothes bag in, but I kept a pair of socks to keep them on my feet, just to keep my feet warm, and that made a big difference. And then you toss them right before you get into the water.
All right, so as we go with each discipline, let's throw down your times. So what was your swim times? I know you have them pulled up. We'll get Jennifer's pulled up, too. Did you have what the final water temp was?
59. According to my watch, but I think it was warmer than that. I really do.
There was that cold section that was probably in the 50s. But I agree. For me, there's like a La Quinta is like a shock. And like you get claw hands. Like I didn't have claw hands. Like it felt more 60s.
All right. Swim time for me was 33:11. So very ecstatic about that. Like super pumped. Because my swimming has been a far cry from where I have been in the past based on, right, the past. This is where I am today. So what does it demonstrate? I think this is really important. You know, I've had some shoulder mobility issues for almost a year now and working to come back from that. So swimming volume has been down. Frequency has been down. So what does that mean as an athlete or as a triathlete? Like, really do what you can without irritating it anymore and slowly move your way into, you know, some strong swim sets, which I've only done a prescribed swim set the past like 2 weeks. Focus on the bike and the run, do what you can, and trust, you know, that you have this fitness and just that you have this fitness and ability to pick up where you left off. Like you have the skills necessary. So I was about a minute, 90 seconds off of what I normally swim. So with all that said, and I got stronger on the bike and run, like you got to celebrate that. You got to be in gratitude for it. Of course, it's not what the mind wants. It's not ideal because you have this evidence of the past of all this volume you've done, but that's just not where I was this time. So super, super pumped with it.
I think you were like maybe less than a minute off of your time last year when you had all this swim volume. So I think it really speaks to mindset. I've watched you over the last like year, just keep moving forward. What can I do? And there was a lot of times we were at the pool and you were just kicking like from one end to the other because you're like literally couldn't even lift your arm. And, but staying in relationship with the water is so important. So mindset. That's like those subliminal like messages. Mindset. Okay, Jennifer, mm-hmm. Swim time. How do you feel about it?
So my swim was 37:29, and I don't love the time, but I felt really good. I felt really good when I was swimming, and I swam over by about 200 yards. My pace actually was like 133 per 100, which is about what I felt like I was swimming. So that's like on par. It was. When you come back in, the sun is in your eyes. It was really hard to see their buoys. Like the people were yelling. So I think I'm not surprised that there were some like weird navigation issues that I had. So I felt really good. I, for like a year, went through like panic swimming. Like I would panic every time I would do an Ironman swim or half Ironman. And it's great that that like now is fully in the past. Cause that was a very crowded swim. And also BJ and I both have Texas coming up and that's an extremely crowded swim. And so, and I got really mad last year in Texas when I was swimming, I was so frustrated with all the people in the contact. So I'm glad for me that the Harbor swim equaled a really like, it was pretty like dense swimming with people and it was fine. I wasn't mad at anybody. Like I just did my thing. I could navigate. I was okay with people touching me. So that's good prep in 3 weeks. So I feel really good about it. Like it's not a great time, but it was choppy. I think the pace was pretty good. Yeah, I'm happy with it.
All right, let's move on to the bike. What did you end up putting on for that bike?
Oh, that was fun. I did a 2:47:38. Yeah.
Happy with that?
I'm really happy with that. Yeah, so going into this race, I really love cycling, and that is usually my favorite part. And so I have Ironman Texas coming up, and the point of Ironman Texas is to qualify for Nice to go to Worlds, but this year there's an opportunity for women at Oceanside, if you're top five in your age group, to get to a slot to Ironman Worlds. And so this race was kind of like, it's just my race, like into my A race. And so I was like, well, might as well just like go for Nice while I'm going to do it. And so I knew to do that, I would have to ride really hard, because that's one of my strengths. And so I knew that I wanted to like really push the power on this and know that I might risk overriding, but I wanted to see what that line was. And so I'm really happy with this. That was a fun bike course.
Yeah.
It was really fun.
Did you end up putting any layers on?
No, no. Halfway through the swim, and I was like, oh, I'm kind of hot. I don't need anything. I didn't put anything on. Yeah.
Nice.
And it was fine. I was warm the whole time.
Quick transition. yeah. Any advice about the bike course, things that you did or things that you observed that would help people navigate this course? Because this is another one, there's some trepidation about this course. It's tough. There's a lot of climbing. Also, you can't ride this course, which is kind of the beauty of race day, because you get to discover this beautiful part of Oceanside that nobody really gets to see because you're on Kemp Pendleton. So it's really a gift that they open that up and they allow us to race there.
Yeah, it's really cool. Yeah, so this course is definitely a course for cyclists. And if you are a cyclist versus a triathlete, there's different ways in which you kind of ride your bike. Triathletes, we're used to like really focusing on numbers and power and data, but you're going to ride this course not as well as you can if you do that. So because of like the pitchiness and the punchiness of the hills, because there's like some steady climbs, the goal in an Ironman isn't to hit your power numbers, it's to ride a bike fast. And that means that sometimes, like if you're going to like an apex of a climb, you should actually push the power there to get faster speed to carry your momentum up and over so you can descend faster. And as a cyclist, like you learn how to do this. Triathletes, we tend not to. And so what I saw a lot of on the course was people like just doing their power numbers and losing so much speed on the descents. Like there are so many people that would pass me on a climb and then like sit up on a descent and I would fly by them. I mean, giant men should not be faster than somebody that is 80 pounds heavier than I am. It just doesn't make any sense. But I, you know, was much faster on the descent, and it's just free speed. Like you're not pushing any watts. I'm still recovering and I'm going 30 miles an hour and I can carry the momentum up and over the next hill, which means I'm doing less power up and over the next hill and carrying it down. So if you're going to do this course, think about like, how do you make a bike go fast? Like you ride the apex a little bit harder. You really work on descending. You work on your lines. If you are a faster cyclist and you're able to ride through people, you know, get right up to somebody, especially in the wind. There's a lot of wind that day. You get right up to somebody's wheel and then you make the pass, because then you're legally drafting for those 20 seconds and then you make the pass. So just like tactically riding this course over time, especially in the wind and the way it is, will make you much faster. Even if you're going for a top age group slot or you're just participating, everybody wants their bike time to be faster. So it's just ways about how do you attack the bike differently. It's not just about what's your heart rate and what's your power. It's being smart about the course.
My bike time, 2:43. So not my fastest bike there, but also really happy with where it was based on, again, training for an Ironman versus a half Ironman. But the goal for me was to stay in aero. Like I've really, really been holding myself to that commitment of being able to hold power in aero position when possible and watch that habit I've built where I just pop up. And for no reason at all. Of course, there is the, you know, you need to stretch your lower back, but stayed in as much as I could. I love this bike course. I think you can get carried away in the first 15, 20 miles and feel like this is awesome. Like it's flat and a little bit of rollers. And, you know, I'm really feeling it today. That next 30 miles, so important. As soon as you take that right turn through the gate, after you go over the highway, you go through the gate, you turn right, and then you get a little ways, and then you go up that big first hill. Like that gives you a good sense of what to expect coming next. But yeah, I felt good on the bike. I held back early a little bit because I wanted to really push power towards the end, with my glute, just focusing on something that's happened in the past, and I want to change that. So, kept a higher cadence, lower power early on. And then that benefited me towards the end. Also, I will say, like, as you do this course more, you really start to learn the sections where you can push and sections that you can carry your momentum, like Jennifer was talking about, over the hills, but also the groups of cyclists together. So there's this one point on the course where I always run into 7 to 10 cyclists who are just like grouped together. They're in the pack, right? They're just hanging together. And of course, my old self comes up and I'm just shaking my head as I'm with them, like, oh, don't they, like, you got to keep moving. If you're going to move, you got to move. And then I realize they have nothing to do with how I feel. Like, I can take action on this. And so in the past, I think the first 2 years, I would hold back and just hold my distance behind them. And then the past 2 years, I've taken the initiative of, I'm going to pass them. I'm going to pass 7 to 10 people. Like, I'm going to give it a go. I'm going to use a match to get in front. And I did that one time yesterday with that stretch, the final 10 miles. I passed this big group, and there were some strong cyclists in it just by the way that they were biking, the way that their bikes were. And I got to the front and I'm like pushing. And I'm like waiting for them to come around me, and they weren't coming. I'm like, oh my God, I'm leading this group. Okay. And then the mind was like, okay, they're all sucking my wheel. And then again, I was like, it doesn't matter. Like, you stay the course, be here now, stay awake and ready. And which you had shared with me before the race, which really helped, because there were a lot of chunks missing in the pavement yesterday, more than in the past, a lot of holes. But I was at the front of this group for a really long time. I want to say like 5 to 10 minutes. I was like, no one's coming around me. And then they finally all came around me. That's when Deepak came around me. And then we kind of chatted a little bit. But yeah, really happy that I was able to stay in aero and then have the power to hold to the end. So super happy with the bike going into Texas. I think it's really important to set yourself up like this and feel good. Anything that's close to your A race, like, feeling good is the most important element of all of this. And if you don't feel good, you've got still a few weeks to adjust and adapt. So yeah, pretty happy with the bike.
All right, let's talk about that epic run course. How'd you guys feel coming off the bike? Those first few steps where, you know, you can, if they're showing up or they're not showing up. How'd they show up for you, Jennifer?
Yeah, I was really worried. Well, because I knew I executed my bike plan perfectly, which meant I was riding that like razor's edge of like maybe over biking, maybe not. And because I've been building for an Ironman, I haven't really been doing a ton of like steady 70.3 watts. So it was kind of like, and then it was much pitchier than I thought it was going to be. And so I was like, uh-oh. And I too burnt quite a few matches, because I was, if I decided that like, if I was going to pass somebody, I would always say yes to passing somebody. Like, that's how I was going to attack the course. And so I did lots and lots of passing. And they felt really heavy. Usually I feel pretty good off the bike, even in brick sessions, but my legs were like muscularly very achy and like really heavy. And like, they were not like, it stayed that way for like a long time, like more than I thought it was going to. And during the downhills, I'm like, okay, let's do a downhill. They're going to turn over. And I was like, nope, they're not. Damn it. So I was really worried, but I went into this race having one plan, which was, if I'm going to be top five at Oceanside, it has to be like my best executed race, and there's no other options. And so that means that, like, yeah, my legs feel bad, but I have to stay on the pace I want to stay on. And then if they give out, they give out, and that is what it is. So I stayed at like the top end of my pace range. I wanted to be like sub eights. And so I stayed like right at that eight for a while, just hoping that like they would turn over. And a good friend of mine suggested that if ever you're having difficult with like a cadence or heavy legs, to do strides within the run. So there's this great downhill section, not super steep, like moderately downhill. And so I did some shakeout strides every downhill that I did. And that finally got my legs turning over. And then by the time I got to the turnaround, I actually I was like, oh, there they are. Thank goodness. So that felt good. And then I could trust it. And then I'm like, okay, cause my heart rate was low. Like, the effort was fine. It was just my legs were heavy. And then once they start turning over, I could pick it up. And that felt so, that's a fun course to feel good on. it's a really fun course to feel good on. So my run time ended up being a 1:43:25, which is my fastest half Ironman run. And it was actually almost my fastest open half marathon run. I haven't done open in a long time, but that was pretty close to that. So I felt really good. Ended up with like a 7:50 pace. So ended up running my goal, was the sub eights. And before I before I kicked it at the second turnaround towards the finish line with about 3 miles to go. Before I did that, I know I could sustain that pace. I had a lot more miles left at that pace, which is exactly what I want to feel going into Ironman Texas. And now I know too, I learned the lesson that my legs can feel like really heavy if I bike really hard, but it doesn't mean that I overbiked. It just means that I have to like stay with it and stay patient and do what I can to get my legs to turn over. And so that's a good lesson for me. I've never had that experience before. And so I'm glad that if I had been like, well, it's okay, Texas is soon, whatever, if I feel bad, I'll back off and like drop down to nines, my legs, one, would have felt the same. Like 8 minute pace was going to feel the same as a 9 minute pace. They were going to hurt no matter what. And I would have lost my spot to knees, right? And I wouldn't have learned the lesson that like, if I stuck with it and did the cadence work, then I could get the legs to flush out. So I'm really glad that I had no other backup options for me. And I was okay if it meant that if I was going to walk the second loop, I was going to walk the second loop. Like I've done that before. Like I've walked plenty of Ironmans. Like, I know what that's like. So I was okay doing that too.
So it sounds like your mindset was dialed in prior to this. Like you were locked into plan A and there's no plan B or C or D. And we're big fans of that. I mean, that's why Yogi Triathlete exists, because there was no other option and there continues to be no other option. That's why she's going to exist tomorrow and the next day and the next day, because there's nothing else we can do. Mm-hmm. But let's say you've got an athlete and they're starting to go down the, oh my God, I'm going to lose my spot to knees. Like my legs feel awful. I shouldn't have gone so hard. And now the mind is falling. Like what's like a tip you would give someone for in that situation? They come off the bike, they've gone on the razor's edge, they're in a good position, but now the legs aren't showing up and their mind is starting to fall into like, you know, more negativity. What would be something they could do to kind of at least get them to some kind of neutrality or in that present moment to stay with it?
Yeah, I mean, so you don't know what's happening next and you have no idea what's happening to the people around you, right? You have no idea. And usually if it was hard for me, it's hard for everybody else. The other piece is like, what can you do in that moment? Like there is a lot you can do in these long races. Like usually can you go to the aid station, get calories? Maybe you need some water. Like what are the troubleshooting you can do to physically take care of your body? That matters. And then I will allow myself or an athlete, like, okay, you get a minute. You get a minute to feel really sorry for yourself. Like take it, like get it all out of your system, let it go. And now focus on how you do the rest of your race. So that way you're not like fighting it the whole time, but your whole focus is how do I take care of my body? How do I stay focused on the next step in front of me? And sometimes maybe it's aid station to aid station, maybe it's house to house, like whatever it is, just keep on focusing. How do I move forward to the next part and the next part? And you just stay focused there. And so many times these long races, things turn around. If you can keep your mind steady, your body will turn around if you have the fitness and the ability there. And then sometimes it doesn't. Fine. But that's better than spending 8 miles hating yourself and like being angry at yourself, right? You'd rather spend 8 miles getting to the next part and getting to the next part.
Yeah, because hating yourself for those miles, all that does is slow you down and it's poison. It's just poison to your heart and poison to your muscles, like your physical heart. Yes, your energetic heart, but like your physical heart, your brain, it's like everything is reacting as if what you're doing is a massive threat. And it's already taxing the nervous system as it is because you've already gone beyond, right? That's your body giving you signals saying like, oh, I'm kind of tired. But as endurance athletes, we need to override that. We need to keep going. And we do have control over our response if we do train the mind. And so that's how you hold into that steadiness, that unshakability, which is something I love. I love to feel that unshakability of the mind because it's all within my control. But like BJ had said earlier, just like the be here now, like right now, like right here, right now, right here, right now, just yeah. Be right in what's happening. Like what is the truth of what's happening right now?
Even if it's like counting the number of dogs you see on the course. Yeah. I mean, literally like whatever it takes, because there's such joy around you because you have people doing amazing things. People are really excited about their moment. This is their first race they've ever done. Like their family's there. Like there's all these beautiful emotions around you too that you can tap into. So like if you like dogs, finding the happy dogs, like whatever it takes to just be like in that present moment, find the right car. I mean, literally whatever it takes. But if you do that, at least you're bringing your mind to like what's happening right then.
Yes. Love it. Okay, Beach, let's talk about your run.
My run. So fun. I love this course. I really do. I know that I can run faster on it since the first year I did it. It just suits me. You know, it's not flat. There's some rollers, but there's a lot of flat. But I love the undulations of it. I love the variety of it, which is, and it's a loop course, which is my jam. So yeah, I did a 132.05. My goal was to break 7 minutes per mile on the run. I came in at 7:02. So close. But that's what's going to keep me coming back. And looking back, it is the fastest half marathon of 70.3 I've done. The previous one was 13 years ago.
What?
In Providence.
I mean, that's huge, BJ. That's amazing.
So I think in Providence was super hilly, if you remember that course, when I was 39. So what is it? That's it just
or 38.
Yeah. It just points to, like, if you believe, like, I say this a lot, I believe I still can get faster. I believe I can still get faster, even if I don't see evidence or nobody jumps on board with it. I believe, and I think self-belief is that element that athletes are always constantly working on to build. And sometimes it takes, like, the vocal cues, like constantly saying it to others, like, I believe, I believe, I believe, and surround yourself with people who believe in that, and maybe move away from the people who are not helping to support that mission. But I believe I'm still getting faster, and it just showed. Like, I've run my fastest half marathon, like, since 2011. So that's pretty phenomenal.
That's huge. That's crazy.
And I still think I can get faster. I'm gonna.
And you had such a good bike.
And I had a good bike. I had a solid bike.
It wasn't. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So to your point of the legs, I think too. When the water temperature is colder, I feel like those first few miles of the bike kind of zap a little bit extra out of your legs. Like, they're trying to warm up, but they're cold, and so maybe your muscles are working harder. That's just my belief. But I too came off the bike and I was like, oh, I don't know what's going to happen here. But my legs were a little, actually, as I was coming in from the bike, I saw Brittany going out up the hill, and I was like, wait a minute. She's like, she's not that far away. This is Brittany, my training, old training partner out here. So I was like, I'm going to try and catch her so that we can run together. So that was sort of a little carrot for me. Never caught her. She's a professional. But getting up that first hill, I knew that the legs were going to come around. I also was, I had my handheld in my hand, and for some reason, I just didn't want it in my hand. I'm just like, I don't want to run with this thing. So I kind of drank, I think, almost 3/4 of it in the first 4 miles, because it wouldn't fit in my back pocket unless I drank some of it. So at around mile 5 or 6, I was able to slip it into the back pocket. And then that was it with that thing. I moved to cola, because you guys were talking about how do you pull yourself like into the moment, maybe because your mind is sort of drifting. And I felt that a little bit. So I just started taking cola at mile 6 or 7, which is so good. Oh, I love Coca-Cola on the run. Yeah, let's take a moment for that. It's really good.
liquid gold.
Liquid gold. And I had this really amazing soul out there, Andrew, at the far end of the course, who was giving me really good splits. He was telling me where I was. He was like, you're top 10, you're 30 seconds, running 30 seconds faster than the next three, which puts you in seventh. He was conveying all this to me while I was running, which was awesome. And then I got to that... I got to that turnaround and it was game on. Like, 2.5 miles, just push as hard as I could. That's a tip. Like, when you get to that turnaround, you really have a descent right after you turn around. There's like a nice descent. You can pick up some momentum. You go around the street, a U-turn, and then you go up just slightly a little bit, but then it's like flat the whole way to a nice descent. And then one last hill up that is not that bad. It's probably like 30 seconds, 45 seconds. And then it's literally a mile and change.
And you can see it too. You can see the turnaround coming, mm-hmm. or the turn. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Amazing crowd support out there. My carbon shoes are yet to be determined whether they're going to stick around, but they certainly helped. I could feel them. I could feel the springiness of them. I'm using the Hoka Cielo. Cielo X1s. I don't know. The new Hoka carbon shoes. Anyway, we'll see if they stick around. But yeah, felt good. Pushed it along the strand to the finish and just pushed it as well as I could. Definitely was thinking, like, can I hold this pace for an Ironman? Because I've been targeting like 7:15 in these runs. Most likely if I hit a 7:30 at Texas, I'd be ecstatic. So I was about 30 seconds off that my Ironman pace. So as I was running those final few miles, I was thinking, can I hold this? And it's funny, as I was creeping towards a 6:50, you know, 6:55-ish pace, I'm like, not so much. But when I would drop to 7:10, 7:15, I was like, oh, this feels a lot better. Like, I'm breathing heavy, but I feel this. This feels comfortable. So it's almost like I've trained my brain to...
I was saying, I think that was happening too when I got off the run. Like, I immediately went to Ironman pace because I've been training Ironman pace, and it like took the extra effort to be like, no, like you have to do half Ironman pace. Did you feel that mm-hmm. too?
Yeah. And that's when I was, you know, speeding up. I'm like, get out of this, like turn the legs over, like push, you know, you can push. And I liked how you talked about, it doesn't matter if it's 9 or 8 or 9 pace.
Yeah. Your legs are going to hurt. They're going to hurt.
Right.
Like that's always in Ironmans too. It'd be like, because my brain's like, slow down. And I was like, yeah, but like, it's not like the pain's going to stop. Like you'll be in pain if you're running fast or slow. So you might as well just run fast.
Yeah. The downhills were awesome. Like I saw the video of Brendan coming downhill. I was swinging the arms.
Oh,
I was like swimming.
I hit somebody in the shoulder. I went bam coming down.
So there's a really steep, there's a couple steep hills, but this one specifically, you hit it after you climb the pier on the first loop. You go past the Top Gun house by the Seabird Hotel and you run down this like super steep hill and you just got to send it. I don't even know how long it is. Yeah,
but it's great if you do, it's definitely a trail ride. It's for trail runners
because then it goes right into a left turn, like, and people are coming the other way, so you gotta like be on, and then you carry that momentum along the strand, which you can carry it all the way until the lifeguard tower, which then you go back up on Michigan. So yeah, and you do that twice, and you also get to go up it once.
It's so fun.
Yeah, it's a fun run course. So stoked. Really happy with the time. Yeah.
And let's talk a little bit about nutrition. I'm sure people are curious about what you were targeting per hour. Did you have to shift on the fly? Yeah, tell us about your nutrition. We'll start with you, Beach.
So starting from the swim, a goo before the swim, and then right on the bike, I'll start my hydration like 10 minutes in. I've got water bottles stacked with Goo Roctane energy drink with probably about a third to a half packet of the right stuff for most sodium. And then in my hydration system on the bike, I had a caffeinated, which is something I started using this race, caffeinated Goo Roctane, the tropical fruit, I think is the flavor, with some right stuff in it as well. So I was constantly sipping nothing. I didn't take any water in, didn't stop at any of the aid stations, or to pour water, grab a bottle to pour water on my head. So I just stuck with those two water bottles in the hydration system. I finished almost all of it, I would say. So certainly hydrated, and it showed when I had to go to the bathroom running into T2, that was fun.
What was the amount of calories you took?
So it's 250 calories per water bottle. Oh, I took a gel. I don't normally, but I felt like I needed it. So I took a caffeinated chocolate coconut goo Roctane gel on the bike. So that's 100 calories, 750 with the liquid. So that's 850 on the bike, roughly. And then onto the run, another 250 in my water bottle. I probably drank 200 of it. And that had right stuff in it as well. That was a Roctane mixed drink. And then cola. I don't know how much cola has, but
a lot.
So I just kept drinking cola every aid station. I took cola and then water. I just got on that system. So that's all the calories I had. But I had a little bit around mile 4 or 5. It was kind of like a... more diaphragmatic, I think, because I was breathing, because I was pushing. So it was just like, calm your breath. So I just took a few deep breaths, and then it just went away. So I didn't have anything other than that.
So I had a Cliff Block, the caffeinated, like an hour before the swim start, like a little extra caffeine and sugar. And then on the bike, I use Scratch Super Fuel and the right stuff. And I had two bottles and I lost one on a bump. So I had my main bottle, which has 400 calories, and I had half a packet of right stuff. But I have, I brought extra calories with me on the bike, so I knew I could make up the calories. So I didn't like stop to get the hydration. I knew I'd be fine with it. And it was pretty cold. And so I think I had about 300 calories an hour on the bike, which is probably a little low, which might've led to also why my legs were a little like heavy gain off of the bike. Had it been a hotter day, I would have had to have grabbed another hydration drink from an aid station to make up for the losing the Scratch Super Fuel. But luckily with a short race, if it was an Ironman, I probably would have stopped and went back and got it. That's probably what I would have done, but I made the game call that it was going to be fine. And so I did that. And then on the run I use SIS gels, which I really like because you don't have to take water with them. And so I like, because I get stressed out having to have like an appropriate amount of water with gels so that I can just take it whenever I want to. So I like that. So I had three gels, and then mile six, I switched to Coke. And then I just had Coke at every aid station going forward. So yeah, I don't know how many total calories that is, but it was good. No GI issues. I was totally fine with that. That all worked out really well.
Well, both of you crushed it. Jennifer, you held fourth. Like, you were just so solid in fourth. You went by me. I was like, all she needs to do is just continue to do what she's doing. Cause you had like 4 minutes over fifth, and then, third had like six over you, right? So as long as you kept doing what you were doing. So you held fourth, got your spot to Nice, or you're going to get that email to go to Nice. So what does that make Texas look like for you, since Nice is already in the bag?
Yeah, it's fun. It's always fun to have different goals for races. And so it's a relief to have that. My daughter's very, I told my daughter I would take her to France this whole time. She's going to go to France, right? I'm going to go to France. I was like, I got to get a spot. Hang on. So now it's changed. It's actually made Texas even harder. It seems like it'd be easier because like, you know, going for a slot, but actually it makes it harder because now I have to like elevate what my goals are. So like to get a Nice spot with the way that Ironman is doing it this year, I probably could place not, you know, maybe top 10 and I would get a Nice spot. But now I want a podium at Texas. And so now like I'm not going to be, now my level of like what I want to do has actually become harder. So I would like to podium at Texas, which is asking a lot of myself. But I think that given the way that I race and I fill the day, like I think I am there. And I would love to PR my Ironman, which right now is a 10:41 at Texas last year. And so my goal is to PR and get somewhere on the podium. So I'm excited about that.
Do you think there's any, I know you even want to go harder, but is there almost like a sense of you don't have to be so calculated because you've already got your slot, you can risk a little bit more?
Yeah. Yeah. I was actually joking that like now I never risked things in an Ironman before. Cause it's just like, cause something's always been on the line. So I have to always be like instead of like, I'm going to pass them, I would be like, well, maybe not. Like I'd be a little more calculated. And last year at Texas, I was really calculated on the bike, but I think it cost me quite a bit of time. And so, and now I can be not calculated. I can be a little bit riskier on the bike and see what happens. And now I'm really confident in my run because of how good I felt yesterday running those paces. Like I think I've got a really good run in me. So yeah, I'm going to be a lot riskier. The downside is like, if you risk an Ironman, like those last 10 miles of run could really suck versus a half. You only have a couple miles. So it might be a long day, but that's fine. I mean, whatever. I've had long days before.
No plan B. You just got to go out there and go for it. Yeah. Right? It's like what you love, and you've set yourself up for, to have that slot already taken care of. And of course you're going to elevate. Like, of course you're going to go for something bigger. It's who you are.
That's what happens.
That's what happens. Like life's going to call you to more. So it's like, if you can call yourself to more, then it's like you're in flow with how life wants you to express yourself. It's perfect. Beach, top 10 at Oceanside both of you, very competitive age groups. And arguably one of the toughest courses, tactical and strategic courses on the circuit. But you got ninth place. I think you were like, 90 seconds off of seventh. So you did amazing. And how does that leave you set up for Texas?
Yeah, all the sights have been set on Texas. So this was just another stop on the road to this fastest Ironman. But it's great that you can come out of a race, a half Ironman that year, it's not like your A race, and still come out of it with like really good, a really good display of how your fitness and performance is at this point in time. And it's all aligning for Texas. So I'm super pumped with the race with Oceanside. Like, man, yeah, I'm just so ecstatic to be feeling this way, you know, not being able to lift my arm or not being able to move my leg after Arizona a year and a half ago. Like, there's a bunch of things that have led up to this moment yesterday that has been, you know, months, years in the works. And I think as athletes, we get so caught up in the evidence of now, when if you just stay the course, like stay committed, like keep trusting and believing that it's all going to work out. It's always going to work out. This is the perfect example of it, not being able to swim. And then it's only been in the recent weeks that I've been able to swim. And then right up until race day, like having sensation in not even the shoulder of opportunity, but the other one, and still being able to swim just shows you, you got to keep putting yourself in that opportunity to have the experience, and not shut it down way ahead of time because the mind just wants to be done with it. You know, I think that's where I've been in the past and where I see athletes too. They just want to, you know, I'm not going to do the race, or I'm not going to keep training. And it's, you got to keep feeding it day in, day out. There's always tomorrow. There's always tomorrow. So, anything can change, and it changes quickly. So leading into Texas, things are pointing really strong. I'm super, super pumped about it. Yeah.
I really love how you're going for your fastest time at your mature age, because I think with the, like a general consensus is like, you should be satisfied with what you've already done, right? Like you should be so, and it's not that you're not satisfied or happy with it, but that doesn't mean you don't want more. And so I see so often, like there's this woman, she was a spectator and she was cheering like, you've already done so much. And I was like, yeah, but we all want to do, like, we're halfway through the race. Like, like I know, but like, yeah, but I want to finish the race strong. Like, yeah, you know, like, yeah, I want to participate in Ironman, but I want to, like when I first started, like, sure, I want to do it, but like, I want to win one of these things one of these days. Doesn't mean I'm not grateful for what I've done, but it means that I want more. And so what I love about it is like, I think you're very grateful for everything you've done, and you want to see what more you can do. What else is possible? What opportunities exist there? And like really embrace that.
Yeah, I do. I'm not done here. I want to win my age group at some point too. Like, but it takes this relentless, like you can't stop at the first sign that says, this isn't the time. Like your body's not, you got to believe and you got to do the things. It's how committed are you? Like how committed are you to this belief in yourself that you can achieve these things? Like constantly keep going and not be satisfied with, you know, what you've done in the past.
Well, and you think you've already done enough, then you're done.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
That's the thing too. You always have to know that there's more that you can do.
Yeah. And I think when this sport is so beautiful, like it's a lifestyle sport. I love this sport. I love putting my, I'm not done with the sport. I've dabbled in a little bit of trail running and other stuff. But this is where my passion lies. And when you really like find that connection and love for it, you know, this is something I don't see myself stopping right now, like until I'm 100, I think, when I'm the only person in the age group winning every year because nobody's come close.
One of my favorite experiences, you know, it's so cool because, you know, we're good friends and BJ's a wonderful coach and you're a big part of my life, is I also had my athletes with me racing for the first time. And so back to the beach, but we had Chad there and my athlete Edward, and you guys were there and you know the course so well. And so like you're sharing your knowledge of like the course, and they're both pretty new to the sport, and we're all in wetsuits, and like, you know, and you had your athlete there, and we're all jumping in being like children. This like who nobody else is on the beach. Nobody's in the ocean. But a bunch of crazy people in wetsuits, like pretending like we're 5 years old in the ocean, because it is a lifestyle. And it was such a beautiful introduction to them and them having so much fun, and now it's becoming a part of their lifestyle and it's opening up them. And so it's just fun to see how like over time, you just kind of like bring people in, and the sport brings people in, and it brings them joy and playfulness and also like a goal achievement. Like it fits all these different pieces of people's lives. And it's changed my life, your life, athletes' lives. And it's so fun to like see a race that brings all these people together to celebrate that.
Yeah. There's a Chinese proverb that says, tension is who you think you should be, but relaxation is who you are. Mm-hmm. And there is a time, you know, to be serious, but that's not all the time. And, you know, to remember what you used to love as a child. And I think the ocean is a great teacher in that way. When she is crazy and powerful and coming off a storm, like you just, there's no way that you can have any kind of power position there. So you might as well just surrender and have fun. And have that balance in your life. You know, I think triathletes have a bit of a reputation of being too serious, but there's so much more. Like data and information is super important. Like knowing where you are with your goals is super important, but don't forget to, give yourself time for joy and doing the things that you love. And, you know, a lot of times athletes will come to us, and I know you've had athletes that have come to you, Jennifer, who have lost their joy and they want to find it again. And I think that that's what you guys as coaches and myself as a mindset coach bring to athletes, is this ability to return to the joy, because somewhere in the mind that was lost, but it was only lost in the mind. It wasn't lost within you. And, you know, the other day jumping in the ocean was like probably one of the most beneficial things that you all did leading into this race.
Well, and I was thinking of the much joy in the course. There's so many times I verbally went, wee, because you're going down because you're going so fast. Or seeing friends on the course. Like, it was a really joyful race. Like, there were so many moments of just so much fun racing. And, like, you have to get a kick of everybody, like, peeing themselves in their wetsuits waiting for, like, the race to start. Like, there's just so many, like, fun parts of, like, humor and joy just built into triathlon when you're open to it.
The one moment that stood out to me, it's so clear, vivid, where these fans, one little girl had a sign that said free high fives. And then right after her were two sisters with their hands down for free high fives. And I was like, I got to run over there and I got to give it. So I give them high fives. And it's that joy. It's like connecting with the crowd and having a blast. And yeah, it was running fast, but you can also, you know, engage and interact with them. And the kids love it. They have no idea where your hands have been, but their immunity is getting built. But yeah, that was a pretty phenomenal, joyful moment.
Awesome. That was amazing. And that's one of the things that has kept me in the sport for so many years, is it's like our separation falls away and we just become one big family, especially on race day. And if you're thinking about doing Oceanside, do not wait, like sign up, come join us next year. Because it is just so alive. That run course is so alive.
Oh, just want to give a shout out to the race director, Sabrina.
Yeah.
My God. She had her hands full with the weather the past couple weekends in Oceanside and the change of the swim. But she's a dear friend of ours and just does an amazing, amazing job with Oceanside. I just wanted to give her a shout out.
No, I mean, that's one of the best run races I've done. I don't know how many Ironmans and half Ironmans, but it was almost, wasn't it 3,000 athletes? There was like 3,000 athletes that were racing, and that was really well organized and planned, and that was easy to be an athlete, and all the logistics worked out really well.
And leading into, and it was just a couple of days before, but Ironman reached out and they asked us to lead a breathwork session. And so we led that and it was amazing. So thank you for those who showed up, because, you know, standing on a stage with a microphone is pretty much like best moments of my life. And anyway, I just want to give a shout out to Brenda, who was there after the breathwork session. She came up to us and told us, you know, she's been a long time listener of this podcast, so hopefully she's listening today. And I know she's learning and metabolizing a lot from yesterday's race. So just know that we're thinking about you, Brenda. And thanks so much for everyone who tunes into this show. You know, we are, my gosh, 8 years into doing this podcast every single week. And I just want to thank all of our guests. Jennifer, you've been on here several times now, from the US and from other countries. And I hope that there's going to be more remote podcasts from different countries.
Oh,
for
yes,
sure.
Definitely.
All right. Let's just tell people how they can find you or what you have coming up. And then we're going to wrap this up.
Okay. You can find me on my Instagram, just my name, Jennifer Volman, and my website is Finding Endurance. And then I do a new podcast that I launched, Finding Your Endurance Mindset. And I'm a triathlon and mindset coach. And so I coach people around that. And then I'm organizing something in the future, some travel adventures of my own, which will be coming. One will be in Italy. And I think, Jess, you and I have a pretty awesome future one coming up too.
Yes, we do. Jennifer and I will be launching something probably shortly after this podcast gets launched. So this is going to be for the ladies and it'll be in the West, here in the US. And just a short little weekend. And yes. So stay tuned for those details. We would love, it's going to be small. So when this thing gets launched, you're going to want to grab your spot because we're just opening it up to a small community of women who want to play and dive into wellness and dive into some activity.
And joy.
Yeah, enjoy and some amazing food that, oh my gosh, that's one of my favorite things in the world is prepare food for people. So yeah, so stay tuned for that. Beej, any final words about... who you are, what you're offering, what's going on? Are you just like, are you slammed? Do you have any more room for athletes? You're pretty slammed right now, but I know Melissa's got some spots.
Yeah. Yep. All the above. Got my fastest Ironman coming up. I don't know what's going to happen after that.
Kona.
Kona is the goal. So that would be amazing to be back in Kona in October. Yeah, I've got Massachusetts 70.3. I've got Lake Placid Ironman. Racing with a bunch of team members in Massachusetts. We've got a team going to Oregon that you'll be representing with. So on the same day as Placid, Jess will be at Oregon with some of our athletes. And yeah, we continue to grow and expand and love building this local team here and getting people to come up and train with us in person. And Melissa, Coach Melissa as well, over in the Philly area is taking on athletes. And so if you're there or just anywhere, you don't have to be in person. Melissa's a great option. Plus she's a master herbalist. So if you haven't heard, she knows her herbs and can help with not only women's wellness. If you haven't listened to those three episodes that we've put out here on Yogi Triathlete, she's also helping athletes specifically work through fatigue and things like that. So she's a great resource. So reach out to her, reach out to Yogi Triathlete and connect. Let's connect. Let's see you at some of these races. Come up and say hi. We may not always have Clark, so we may have to just be Jess and myself, but that's okay.
All right, and if you're going to Texas, reach out to BJ and Jennifer. You guys will see them there crushing it, and they'll be on the sidelines after they finish cheering everybody on. Thanks so much, guys.